and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 276. In this episode, we're going to be covering Sense8 episode 106, Demons. And in case you wanted to get a hold of us, we have our email, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And our Tumblr account is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. With myself, I have a newbie, a half newbie, and a super fan. I'm a super fan. So we're going to go through fun facts so you can distinguish a little bit with who's who. And we're going to start off with our newbie, Kristen. I'm going to pick on you first as our half newbie, I'll say. What is your fun fact for today?
Of course you pick on the person who was like, fun fact? Oh, crap. I don't have a fun fact. Let's see. What can I talk about? I am really upset. Karen told me last night when I got home from work that Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth walked away from the table for Star Trek IV, and it's still weighing on my brain. So I'm currently very upset about this.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Like, those movies are so good, and Chris Pine is so good in them, and I was really excited about bringing Hemsworth back to play his dad, and like, somehow, some way, they were going to figure out the timelines, like, get his dad involved in the movie. And I was like, that's gonna be really cool. Like, I had kind of seen a little bit of that, but no, now they've walked away from the table. We'll see if they come back at some point, but I was reading a couple of things last night before bed, and it doesn't look good. So that's currently breaking my heart. Good morning, everyone.
I'm sorry that I put that on your shoulders.
It's okay. It's not great. It's not great. It's fun, but also depressing.
Well, you know, space-time is timey-wimey wibbly-wobbly, so you never know. Yeah. Interstellar proved that very much. And then this makes me definitely want to ask our 100% newbie, you, Brittany, what's going on with you, and if it relates to Star Trek as well?
I mean, I can make it relate to Star Trek. That's easy. So I guess my fun fact is that I'm a bit nervous about the CBS Star Trek universe because I feel like it's going to explode and experience the same amount of Star Wars fatigue / anger / I love this thing and other people are angry because I love this thing mood that is currently spreading across the Star Wars fandom. So CBS has a bunch of new series in the works, and this announcement came a long time ago that there was going to be a ton of Star Trek coming out, but it feels like it's all happening so much so fast that it's like, here's a comic series and here's a book series and here's a new TV show and we're also going to have Star Trek shorts and we're going to have season 2 of Star Trek Discovery in the spring, and we're also going to bring back Patrick Stewart, who, like, yeah, honestly, super pumped, like, don't get me wrong, very excited about that, but it's so much at once that now I'm getting nervous about something I was previously so into and so excited about. So, yep, just keeping my feelers out there. I'm very excited about the 4 short treks, which, adorable name, that are coming out this fall ahead of Star Trek Discovery season 2. And those are within the Discovery universe. I'm very excited about the Christopher Pike of the Star Trek Discovery universe who is coming. Just like really pumped about that. And yeah, looking forward to see what they do with Picard and how they're going to bring him back and how they're going to reboot. And I don't know what they're doing with the Next Generation, but we'll see. I just hope it's not so much all the time and people like it and then I can like it. I mean, I'm going to like it and talk about it regardless, but you know, I just hope that there's not a lot of backlash. And if so, I'll just build myself a cute little bubble to live in and be happy about it.
I think, not to derail this conversation too much, but Kristen and I were talking about this last night because I saw a tweet going around that's like, it's very difficult to work in media because everything feels like your job. Like, you can't just read a book or watch a TV show or see a film and not feel like, okay, well, how can I write about this? How can I interpret this? And even on this podcast, like, we do that a lot. This is clearly a show a lot of us enjoy, and yet we have to sit here and pick it apart and think about it deeply, which I don't have an issue doing 99% of the time. But sometimes, especially when fandoms can be trash, it's very difficult to be happy with the thing that you're happy about And sometimes I have to remind myself that, you know, just because everybody else sucks doesn't mean that I still can't enjoy the thing that I'm watching. And I don't know if you have trouble with that, Brittany, but I certainly do. And it's a good wake-up call sometimes.
I feel like, and I say this a lot on this podcast, mostly during the Buffy era, I have almost the opposite effect. I'll have an immediate reaction to something, be it good or bad. And as I sit down, like you said, in that mindset where everything feels kind of like work, I'll pick it apart so much that I end up being okay with it. So, perfect example, and I'll make this quick. David Schwimmer is cast in Will and Grace as a love interest for Deborah Messing.
And
I was pissed when the news came out. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I don't understand it. And I wrote the news article for Hypeable. And as I got to the end of it, I'm like, actually, you know what? This might be okay. And so like, I tend to like react strongly to something and then get to work myself into a neutral space about it. This happens with American Horror Story all the time. Like, I'm like, oh, I guess it's not as bad as I'm making it out to be. But sometimes when I think something's going to be really good, I end up picking it apart so much that I hate it. And that happens a lot with American Horror Story. But there was an Instagram post last night released about the David Schwimmer news after I had talked myself into liking it. I was like, oh, good. He won't come to like episode 7, midway through the season. Grace will be set on a course. Like, everything will be fine. And Max Muchnick posted an Instagram post being like, oh, by the way, he's coming episode 3. And I'm like, well, angry again. So I don't know how to feel. But yeah, I agree with your observation, Karen. I like it sometimes, and other times I can talk myself into a tizzy by the sheer practice of having to write about it or talk about it ad nauseum.
Yeah, I think we can all relate to that. And maybe some super fans felt that way during Buffy Rewatchable, that their favorite show is being picked apart. So maybe I know how it feels now that Sensei has to be picked apart, but it's a
good thing. It's fine. I have the hate mail from Buffy to prove it.
Oh yeah, totally. Right. We'll take our turn there because we can't all love the same things. That would be a boring world. Karen, how is outer space treating you? Do you have any particular feelings about Star Wars, Star Trek? Anything?
I mean, I have unpopular feelings about Star Wars, which is that I don't care about the original trilogy, but I would die for The Force Awakens. But that's neither here nor there. I want my fun fact to be about sleeping, because as we were previously discussing, sometimes I have trouble sleeping, or sometimes I have trouble sleeping too much. And lately, it's been very hard to fall asleep. Because it's been so hot, like almost everywhere on the planet, I think, and even in Ohio, it's been murder. So what I've been trying to do to distract my brain lately is listen to an audiobook. And I chose an Agatha Christie book that I'd gotten like a really long time ago. I think it's really the first Agatha Christie book I've ever read. And Brittany, I feel like you'd be disappointed in learning that.
No.
Okay. Well, it's something about chimneys, I think. I'm not really sure which one it is. Anyway, I keep falling asleep too soon to actually know what's going on. So I've been relaying what little information I do have about it to Kristen every day. I don't know if she enjoys it, but I find it kind of hilarious. Pretty much like 2 people have died so far. They've been shot. I don't know what else is going on.
There was a girl who asked to be blackmailed.
Yeah, she had never been blackmailed before. Yeah. And she was like, I'm eccentric. I'm rich. I'm just going to let this person blackmail me so I know how it feels. And honestly, I kind of get that. Like, you know, she's probably bored out of her mind, a woman in, you know, whatever year this is. And she's like, I've got the money. I might as well make life exciting in any way that I can. And I mean, it turned into like a double homicide so far. So like, that's not great. But you know, she didn't do it as far as I know. Maybe she did. That'll be the twist at the end.
Yes.
And if anyone follows my Twitter feed, I've been having insane dreams lately. So that's good fun. I just want to sleep and not wake up confused about whether I've been pregnant, or I've been sent to the center of the earth, or I've actually watched an episode of Queer Eye. I'm just normal night sleep. Please.
The Queer Eye one was my favorite.
I love that your dreams range from like pregnant to, you know, earth adventures to watching Queer Eye.
Yeah. It was so weird. Like, one of them was from my hometown, and I don't know, it was very traumatic. Much more traumatic than I understand the show being, which is kind of funny. We were in a Walmart. None of them were happy about that. I feel like that's in character.
I'm trying to picture which one of them would have been in green. They can't really put, maybe Jonathan, actually.
It was actually Endicott, which isn't even my hometown, but, oh, yeah. You know, I have no... Jonathan was the only one's name that I knew, so right. Maybe it was him.
Yeah, no, I love him. I think he's great. Keeping things very queer, very gay, and very sexual, I wanted to talk about my fun fact in that I misspelt the word orgasm 3 times in my show synopsis with an I after the S, of which there is not, but I was too embarrassed to Google this because I was like, I don't want that on my internet search history. So thank you, probably Karen, that fixed that. Definitely Karen, that
I
fixed that.
I wasn't going to say anything.
It's the first thing I noticed.
And I was like, it's fine. It's an understandable mistake.
Well, I don't know. Like my spell check, my Grammarly app, it didn't check that part. I don't know if it's like,
I noticed that too.
Well, that's funny that you're not the only one that's misspelling orgasm and your spell check isn't catching it.
Well, I'm typing the show notes and you said you put an I after the S, and so I was typing the show notes and I put an I after the S and I'm like, dude, get out of my head.
I don't know. Is that another word? It's going to be a thing. Yeah. I appreciate you, Karen. You're my forever editor. You always pop in just when we need you, just to clean things up a little bit, so to speak. Anytime. I didn't mean for that to be dirty, but then it became it. Anyways, we're going to jump now into this show's synopsis that I wrote. This feels very self-serving and weird every time. But anyways, in this episode, you get an orgasm, and you get an orgasm. Everybody gets an orgasm. Except for Sun and Riley, because everyone around them is dying / embezzling large amounts of money. And Kala. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is the great orgy episode. We will cover that in the end of our discussion because it does happen a little bit more toward the end. And as we organize, it just makes the most sense. So sorry for that tease there. But I wanted to let everyone know that, yes, we know it happens. But no, we can't discuss it quite immediately in terms of organization. I'm going to start off our conversation here today talking about our Chicago cop, Will. And we start off in this episode by seeing him at a bar, kind of celebrating with his cop buddies, maybe just existence, life. I'm not sure. They don't really have a meaning behind it. Maybe they're just love and life, whatever. And there's a little bit of a phone cute meet that goes on between Will and Riley as she's visiting him. He dials on her phone his number and then confirms with Diego that he's able to hear Riley. So that was kind of like, I guess, our confirmation that they weren't crazy. Do we need this? Is it something that at this point that we're like still questioning? Or are we like, okay, they're definitely losing their minds? Where do you fall when you're watching this episode, Kristen, on this thing needing to happen? Was it necessary?
Well, I think with, you know, in a little bit, we'll get to know me, who's also questioning her sanity, and she's questioning whether or not there is something wrong, and is there something wrong with her brain that's causing all of this, or is all of this causing something to be wrong with her brain? Like, she's going through all of that. So I think this is kind of a bit of a reflection of that. Like, because you've got this character who's questioning everything so deeply, you've got these other two characters who are proving that A, they're not crazy, that B, they both exist in the physical world, that despite the fact that they can visit each other without jumping on a plane, neither one of them has anything wrong. So, like, I always just assumed that, yeah, they were kind of just giving you a firm, these people aren't crazy, this actually happens, and they're both currently, you know, awake, alive, nobody's dreaming, nobody's, you know, losing it, nobody's hallucinating. Like, this is real, this is how they're connected, this is how this works.
Yes, well, I can see from the perspective of it solving things for us, teaching us more about # the science. Brittany, I know we have a lot of feelings about not questioning the science. The show beckons for us to at every single step. How are you feeling at this point in terms of what you know and what you don't know, in terms of their interactions, what they can do?
I feel like the not knowing is just part of the show, and it's proven to be so far that they're going to, they have a game plan of when and where it's appropriate to dump information on you. And I think the fun of it is that you're learning things as they're learning things. It's not like, hey, audience, here's what's going on and watch these people figure it out. And I like that aspect of it because I think it's very much, it's different than, let's say, when we were questioning the science and Pushing Daisies, where the audience gets a big dump of information at the beginning by the narrator, and then we're watching them figure it out and learn the rules along the way, and, like, you know, we're in on the secret with the pie maker. But here, it's still all a secret, and no one's really in on it except Jonas, but we can't have access to him. So I'm actually doing fine with the way the science is playing out in this series, and I think it's a huge part of it. So I'm totally cool with it. I was cool with it a few weeks ago when I was last on the podcast, and I think they're doing a great job of keeping me personally interested in the individual storylines while also unfolding how they're connected in a very interesting way. And I actually really liked the cell phone part of this episode. I thought it was just a nice reminder for both of them that, like, hey, you're not going crazy, even though everyone around you is seeming to think you are. And they both are, Riley and Will in particular, are both very much alone in, like, you know, Will is constantly surrounded by people, but completely and utterly lonely. And Riley can't seem to find the people to be around. So I think she needs to have Will as that person, even though he's hundreds of miles away.
I'm really glad you said something about the pacing, because I know last week, I think it was Caitlin in particular, said, it was Caitlin or Ariana, I don't remember, who said that it's very slow. And I think one of the things that, unfortunately, this podcast isn't helping with is the pacing, because the show is very bingeable. One episode really does kind of lead into the other. But as somebody who loves action movies and explosions and a lot of things going on, I actually find the pacing of the show quite comfortable because there's so much happening. And if you think about it, we've got 8 main people, each of which basically have 2 separate stories going on with them. They have their day-to-day lives, and they have them discovering that they have these abilities. That is a lot to cram into an episode of a show, and you can't get to everyone right away. Otherwise, we'd be complaining about it being too fast and losing content and information. So I actually think that the show is moving at a good clip. Although if you do think about it, it is interesting that it took until episode 6 to get that phone call. I feel like that would have been one of the first things I did. But to be fair, Riley almost died. Will's got a lot going on trying to figure out what happened to Angelica. They've got some other things on their minds. So for them to kind of take a minute to be like, hey, we should try this, makes sense. Although if it were me and this were happening to me, I probably wouldn't be worrying about too much else. I'd be like, all right, why can I suddenly speak other languages? And why am I suddenly seeing other people in my brain and visiting places across the world without leaving my hometown?
Yeah, and I guess it was pretty convenient that the sensei Will happened to be connecting with at the time natively spoke English, because then it could be understood by Diego when she was speaking to then confirm this very easily for us. So it feels like they're planning that out kind of nicely. I know we had some discussion last week about the idea of what languages they're speaking really and how it's translating in their minds, and not questioning the science of it, but more the production behind that, the idea that they decided to all speak English. But that's neither here nor there, because then we definitely get into some action with Riley's life. We will discuss that when we get to her section, but I wanted to talk about the potential consequences of Will fighting off the fellow cops in the bar while he's trying to save Riley's life. Brittany, do you see this as having major retributions coming on for him in his cop job?
For Will, well, I don't know. I mean, I feel like he's gotten away with a lot so far that would have immediately got him thrown off the force. Like,
that is totally fair.
seeing things and, you know, just banging down someone's door, for instance, and then just staring at them randomly because you think you're in a museum heist situation.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to have huge consequences, but then I also didn't really believe that Sun was actually going to go to jail. So maybe things could creep up and Will's dad and his namesake might not always be getting him out of the things that he gets himself into, especially now that he's sort of, you know, just trying to get to go see Jonas. And, you know, there's only so many apologies and strikes, I guess, that you can get with your captain. So as long as Diego keeps his mouth shut about certain things that are going on, especially in regards to, you know, Will confiding. I think Will needs a new confidant. I wouldn't keep confiding in Diego much longer because he does seem a little crazy on the surface if you're not inside Will's head.
I will admit that I have a new ship watching it this time around, and it is absolutely Will and Diego because of the "I like them crazy" line, especially. That's what brought this to mind, Britt, when you were saying.
I mean, I feel like you're supposed to be like Diego is. I mean, I don't think Diego was actually flirting with him, but that was obviously like his intent to kind of make Will a little uncomfortable. And I was like, I could maybe get behind this.
Well, yeah, it's kind of just evolving.
It made Will just uncomfortable enough going into the other scene that we will get later on.
That is true. It was like
a little tease before everything.
It was the foreplay.
For real, though, really was. Let's move along so we can get to that. We're going to go into Sun now. Sun ends up taking all of the embezzlement heat. She has a press release where she's talking to everyone and saying, "I did it all. It was 30 million won, I believe, or maybe a billion. It was a lot." And she isn't offered bail during her trial because she, quote, has enough resources to be able to get out of the country should she want to, even though this is her first major or any offense. That seems like a lot. Prison is basically not shaping up to be a very good thing so far because she has to take a shower and change clothes without a curtain, which is meant to show us how dehumanizing this process is starting to become or always has been, whether with her father and her brother, or now that she's dealing with their consequences in prison. And I can only imagine how horrible this would feel. Then what are your feelings here on Sun taking the heat for her brother's mistakes?
I mean, kind of when she first offers to take the heat, you're like, okay, she's being the good Samaritan and that's great, but this could never actually happen. And then, you know, it all goes down and she ends up in prison and you're like, okay, so something has to happen that these jerk faces get their comeuppance, right? Like, this can't be how this ends. So I don't really remember what happens. So I'm shooting blanks here. I really don't remember. But yeah, I love Sun and I it's so rough. Like when I remember thinking while watching this time, like, would someone in her situation like immediately go to prison like that? Or is there any way she could have like negotiated for like, whatchamacallit? With the ankle monitor.
Oh, like a house arrest?
House arrest. That's the word evading me. Yeah. Like I was running through my brain. Like, I wonder like how realistic it is that she would be, you know, sent to prison immediately, or like with how rich her family is and how influential they are, you know, despite the fact that she's kind of quote unquote betrayed them with this embezzlement, like, is there a possibility that that could have been, you know, more realistic? I started running through like scenarios in my head and I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea how that all works specifically. I don't know what the probability would have been, but
I don't think that her father would necessarily be down with like a house arrest kind of thing, because the whole point of Sun taking the fall for this is that like they're completely removed from the situation. They had no idea what was going on. They're not claiming to be protecting her, supporting her in any way, which is kind of shitty to begin with. So for them to be like, oh, but like, you know, we love her even though she did this to us, like, please give her a lesser sentencing, I think is the exact opposite reason of why she felt like she needed to do this to begin with. Well, her family is crappy.
This is all still pre-trial too. So like she was denied bail, which is why she's in prison, but she hasn't actually been convicted yet either. Right?
Right.
Right. Okay. So it's all very confusing. But yeah, I mean, I feel so bad because Sun spends more time just by herself, like thinking, like when she's got her, just her thinking face on, like, it's just, I feel so bad for her more often than anyone else in the show because she spends a lot of time just thinking about her choices and which, you know, what she's allowed herself to take on. And it's like, Sun, I just want sunshine and daisies for you. Like, I just want everyone to treat you better.
Yeah, that would be nice. But yeah. For now, she's sleeping on her arm in a jail cell and not having a good day. She does get to escape a little bit. That was nice. I suppose now is as good a time as any to talk about the discussion her and Riley have when there's the quote, "I have conversed with the spiritual son," sitting in front of Riley as she's then having her discussion with Sun. There's a funny thing here that goes on that I always like stop at when I watch this episode, that I always think Riley's going to make fun of Sun's name and be like, "Are you serious? That's really your name?" To be like, "That's not a real name." How? But it's not. I don't know. It's the way it's played off for a half
Why
a second.
Do you I almost
wonder if they're trying to make us think that, and then they're trying to be like, "Ha, why would you think that? She's saying it for a legitimate reason." And I'm like, "Stop doing that to me."
I don't feel that. And I think Riley, especially, like, I don't know, Riley's so chill. I don't feel like she didn't make fun of Bambi's name.
True. And very true.
And as Mai pointed out to us, Riley's not a Scandinavian name, so she has no place to talk.
Yeah.
Also very true. Well, yeah, we do have a pretty nice discussion going on between the two, and we see a little bit more of the science because Sun takes a hit of Riley's hash and is describing it as the memory of being high. So that's interesting because I could question the science all day. I won't. I will leave up this part of the discussion to you, Brittany. For what you know, do you find this interesting that you're getting memory drug hits, or what would you? How do you interpret what's going on with the drug hit here?
I didn't interpret it any weirder than anything else that's ever happened on this show. So I think it's the same thing as if. Like, okay, so Sun gets punched in the face in the ring and has that big bruise, but Cassius doesn't wake up with a huge bruise from getting hit. You know what I mean? Like, they're not physically in the same space or ingesting the same things. However, I think that, you know, there's this, if they can feel it. So, okay, so like, Will... I have to jump to the scene, which is like not what we want to talk about. So can we talk about this later?
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say Will was choking when Riley was being suffocated.
I was going to talk about the other.
But I see how you could talk about more. Yes.
All right. Then you know what? I'll just talk about the suffocation. So
yeah.
If Sun, it's not, never mind. That takes away my whole argument. So I don't know. I guess she just, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the science. I don't know. Forget it.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of was something that escaped my mind that Sun describes it like this. I found it to be interesting, and it almost in a way is more understandable to me when they describe it as something of a memory, that's how they're feeling these things, at least in this scenario with getting high.
But and then Brittany applies to this because Will's physically choking and also physically having an orgasm later. So
right.
The drug thing makes no sense.
Well, yeah. I think it also has to do with the immediacy of the whatever is happening between them, because if there's a lot of pain or something, one of them could tap into that depending on what's going on in their life. Or if you're talking about, you know, sex, like that is obviously kind of a whole body experience and something that's very passionate and powerful. versus, you know, Riley taking a hit off of something, it's not quite on the same level. So I can understand why maybe for Sun, it's more like a memory, something a little less tangible than a passionate moment like, you know, the group mindfuck.
Or like when Leto is having physical period cramps and is crying all the time.
Yeah.
Like he's going through his own thing and is vulnerable to feel those emotions. Whereas I guess, I don't know, does the hit actually calm her down because she's got so much on her mind? Probably not if she's describing it as a memory.
Yeah. I feel like if anything, the conversation with Riley is what really makes Sun feel better and being able to be outside of her cell.
Yeah. For me, I don't know if maybe I just read the situation differently, but I almost assumed that Sun was like, the reason it felt like a memory is because like it was taking, like, it's her first time ever doing hash. So like, I took it less as like a Sense 8 thing and more of a, I've never really done drugs, so this is my weirdo way of being like, yeah, that's what this feels like. Like, she smoked cigarettes or whatever, like she talks about craving a cigarette, but I don't necessarily think Sun's done a lot of drugs in her life, so I thought this was just her inexperience with drugs, kind of her describing what she's going through with it rather than it being a thing with the Sense 8s.
Right, and we, as Kristen just pointed out, have Sun saying she would kill for a cigarette. She's already longing for her freedom. She and Riley are both kind of longing for that same type of freedom because Riley is so trapped by all the drama going on in her life. But then I have to ask you, and I'm sorry to have to pick on you here, Britt, but do you think she's going to have to be in prison for the rest of the series?
I guess so, unless Nomi can come in and talk her way out of it, because I feel like that would be the person to tap into in this situation, is a very passionate public speaker who can allow Sun to testify. However, I don't, all signs point to Sun's not going to get a fair trial anyway, and the judge has probably already made up his mind. So sure, let's go with Sun being in prison the rest of the series.
And let's not forget that she did plead guilty. So it's not necessarily a conviction in terms of, you know, whether or not she did it. She admitted that she did it. It's
probably, oh, yeah, so then she's just definitely going to be in prison and her dog's going to live a very happy life with her trainer.
The dog, yes.
The dog.
I love the dog. And then there is a scene that closes out the episode. We're just going to talk about it now to wrap up Sun's discussion in particular. It's where Angelica and Sun's mother at the same time, the ghosts of, they warn Sun to keep who she is a secret to avoid harm. They're referencing like a them, as if them is going to give her harm, or they are going to give her harm. Do we have any idea who them/they are, Britt? Do you know what's going on in this scenario?
Why is this on me?
Well, you are a newbie. I mean, I can't.
How much has Kristen seen?
Season one.
First season. It's almost over.
I guess it's the people who are coming after them. I mean, we've seen nothing less than that. There's this threat coming, but we have yet to know who that is. Is it the creepy white guy? Is it, we see that Jonas is helping them, but who is Jonas afraid of that they're trying to pass this information on? Who made Angela, what is her name? Angela.
Yeah, Angelica.
Kill herself. Like, I don't, it's a them. It's a them. It's exactly what you said.
Right, yeah. Kind of reminds me of the others from Lost and the way they're talking about it. I think that's what they called them when they were talking about Juliet's crew. I don't know if that was their name. If anyone else watched Lost, I think Kristen, you were into it too. Do you see similarities? No,
I didn't watch Lost.
Well, regardless, I think that it's going to just be interesting to see how this threat evolves and to see thread and threat and to see how our newbies react to whatever or whoever may be chasing after our Sense8, maybe some in particular. Okay, and then we do go right into Riley's plot. She has Nyx show up, and he tortures her with a plastic bag. It's very disturbing. The show continues its shock and awe treatment by being like very up close and personal during the torture sequence. I find this extremely hard to watch. There are many moments in the show that feel that way. Yeah.
But no, first, can we please talk about how shitty of a friend Shugs or whatever his name is?
Yeah, the Shugs guy. Right. He gave her away, didn't he?
The word. And like, he has the audacity to look her in the eye and apologize. Like, that's going to make any difference.
Yeah. It's kind of the character that actor plays, because not only did he play young Voldemort, but he also played like the orphanage version. Fear the Walking Dead, as we watch, yeah. And he seems to play that, for lack of a better term, slimy character that will sell you out.
Well, like, and we kind of felt that going into it. It's like, who, I mean, she literally has no one else, so she takes refuge with this guy, but at the same time, it's like, oh, God. You know, of course he's going to crumble as soon as some cocaine and a gun is waved in his face.
And I only caught this on the third or fourth time watching this, but when she first meets him and is going up to his apartment, I forget who else was talking about it, but they specifically say something about betrayal. So, like, it's totally foreshadowed there.
Oh, I think it's Shug saying something like, your boyfriend was always kind of weird. It's not surprised he betrayed you or something to that effect.
Yeah, and it's just like, but I think somebody else was saying it too, like one of the other sensei was going through something. I think it was Leto and something in the movie were like, yeah, but you don't know that you're getting betrayed and like the audience is with you. So like, they don't know that you're going to be betrayed too. And Leto was like, but I know that I'm going to be betrayed by the nun lady. And the director was like, no, you don't. So, like, it's kind of subtle, but there you go, foreshadowing.
No, Karen, that's a fabulous connection. I am just, like, blown away by the fact that you are just on here and as amazing as you are. Thank you. Guys,
he's just so good for the ego. Like, spend 10 minutes with him and you will feel like a new person.
Oh, gosh.
Unless you're a newbie and have to make all the predictions.
Then it's so much pressure.
Yes. I'm sorry for Adriana, who's always the newbie. It's a lot of work, I know. But then we do have Will beating the shit out of Nyx and the goon that is with him. I will refer to Kristen as if you're watching it for the first time. Do you remember how you felt about seeing Riley gaining the physical strength of Will here? At least, is that what's going on? It's hard to ask you these questions. Try your best to remember when you first watched it.
Well, with what we've seen of the sensates, like, I don't necessarily know if this is her getting his strength, but it's him stepping into the situation and using his strength. Like, it's like Sun stepping in for, I always say his name wrong, Caphus?
Yeah, Caphus.
Caphus. I always say it wrong. But it's like the same thing. Like, Sun literally steps into his body and is a badass. And like, in this situation, it's life or death, and Will is, I think, because of the connection they had earlier in the episode, he's just more sensitive to her. And in that moment, like, he feels like he's choking and steps into her situation to stop it, because in his world, his airway is being threatened too. Like, he is that attached to her at the moment that he needs to breathe. And so he's not just saving her life, he's saving his. And so it's like, it's one of those situations with the physicality of the sensatedness that you just like, he's saving her life and being there for her in this moment. But I think it's self-preservation too. It's survival instinct.
Right. And it kind of seems like he's just swinging at anyone and everything, from how he's hurting his cop friends. But he seems to be hurting the men, Nixon, the other guy, a lot more, because he does break the bones of the one guy. The Netflix subtitles very astutely just said bones cracking. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So it seems like from this point, we're understanding that it's more of a skill set rather than a strength. Is that where you're coming from, Kristen? That Riley is able to tap into from Will?
I think it's just, it's instinct, but I don't think Riley's necessarily tapping into it. I think it's just because of their earlier connection, Will is more sensitive to her needs. And because she like reaches out in that moment because she's powerless, he's the one who responds because he's strong and has more physical strength. But I don't necessarily think it's Riley that's taking his strength. I think he's stepping in to her shoes for her and freeing her from the situation. So I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I agree with that because Riley is panicking and Will at least has the wherewithal to figure out how to get out of the restraints. But I will say, Mitch, that I absolutely don't think it has anything to do with strength and 100% has to do with skill set, because Will, as we've seen, is capable of getting out of restraints and he's got, you know, fighting capabilities, whereas I don't think Riley does. I think she can do like basic self-defense, but in this case, Will is the person to get out of that situation, and he does quite efficiently, actually.
I was going to ask you then, Britt, how are you seeing Will's skill set coming into everyone else's lives? Does he go hand in hand with Sun's, you know, fighting abilities, or is it just we'll use whoever is not indisposed at the time for the fighting sequence? What do you think is going on with that?
Well, I think so. Like, for example, when Cassius is confronting the second set of goons during his test, he, you know, it's not an on-demand feature. So at that moment, he is...
Oh my God, I love that description.
Like, riled up, and I'm assuming a little nervous, but like he feels a sense of calm because he feels like this random Korean woman is going to come and help him. And he even like prays to her in a little bit after, which I thought was very adorable. But he just assumes that it's going to happen to him because he has been blessed with being chosen to have access to this. But he, since he doesn't feel an immediate danger because he thinks something's going to happen to him, he's not able to tap into that skill set. It's more of like, oh, I'm feeling this and you're feeling this. Let's figure out how to work together. I think what Karen was saying with Will, it's not necessarily his strength, it's a skill set. It's, to answer your question, it's more of that Will can find this. He's been trained literally to react in a way that's strategic and still follows a rule book, because he's a cop. He has to think five steps ahead so he doesn't A, make a mistake, or, you know, like he's not going to fight those guys in the alley because he knows that, you know what, it's better to walk away here. We can't make this mistake. So with Riley, yes, she's more connected to him, I guess, in a sense, because they were talking, they talked on the phone. But I think it's that, you know, like with Nomi, she and Will had that connection a few episodes ago because he could pick the locks and calm himself down to realize, okay, this is what needs to be done in order for me to get out of this situation. Will is able to do that again for Riley in this scenario, just the same way that Nomi didn't ask to hear that conversation with Will, but Will has a very strategic way of making the phone call and being able to, you know, play his card as an officer to get information from Nomi's mother.
And I do find it interesting too that you're starting to point out things like Nomi's public speaking as being something that could potentially help Sun, and then we're seeing the fighting skills and the lockpick skills and everything else that's going on with a lot of these other characters. So it's interesting to see this evolve and the story showing different skill sets of the Sensates and how they could potentially help out each other. It's fun to see that as a super fan, to see the newbies experience that for the first time, is what I would say.
I agree, and I think it goes back to what Nomi ends up saying, not to jump ahead or anything, but, you know, she was like, why wouldn't my brain pick somebody more similar to me? Like, we're supposed to be on the same wavelength, right? And Amanita's mom is just like, well, actually, it kind of makes more sense to have somebody different from you because they bring something different to the table. And as we can see, those survival skills, paramount, I would say that's a good word to use at this point in time.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. And that leads us right into what's going on with Nomi, because she learns that all of the confidential journals and everything in her safe, her computer, her backups, everything, they're all taken from her apartment. And she then goes with Amanita to Amanita's mom's house. They're going to stay there for a while. And they seem pretty happy to be there. They do start off the orgy. So once again, not my transition into that, but to acknowledge, yes, they do have a sex scene here that's kind of separate, but then gets into the rest of it. But then we do have that discussion that goes on with Amanita's mother, where she says that she's a professor at a college that teaches a course on evolution. And this brings up two questions. What is this mental state comparable to, ADD or Alzheimer's? And then, is this an evolution of mankind? Kristen, how did you feel when you first watched this scene? Where did you fall on either spectrum?
I mean, I think I have always kind of attributed this hive mind, this sensate ability thing that they've got going on. I've always kind of considered it to be almost like an evolution of mankind, kind of like the X-Men. Like, you know, they all kind of have powers, and eventually, if, you know, evolution would have been allowed to take place, eventually all human beings would have had some sort of power because survival of the fittest and yada yada. So like, I, in my brain, I just kind of like to think this is the first step toward a more highly evolved version of man. So like, they're these little sensate clusters and groups are, they're on a higher plane. Like, they've reached a higher level of evolution than the rest of us have so far. And as far as like the ADD or Alzheimer's thing, I, you know, clearly you would want it to be more like ADD because that's less terrifying and more easily, it's more easy to like take that in and say, okay, this is something that is happening to me, but it's not going to change me. Whereas with like Alzheimer's, it eventually could eat away at who they are individually and create what, you know, like they could all end up being one person in eight different bodies rather than eight different people that can connect when they want to or need to or any of that.
Wow. Yeah. You said exactly all the things that I never would have been able to voice in a wonderful way. Especially how you reference the idea of losing identity with Alzheimer's. I particularly relate to that in terms of how they're feeling here. That I definitely think is how Nomi is concerned. She's worried that she's going to lose her personhood. And as Karen was referencing, the wavelength thing seems to be important to her. She wants to have people she can relate to and that she can really connect to if she's forced to connect with them. It's a bit of an invasion we're seeing here. You don't always want someone around during any of these things that they're seeing. Sometimes it's a bit of an intrusion and you're like, okay, can you go away for now? I'm kind of busy. So go ahead.
Especially if you think about this in terms of the fact that Nomi is a trans person and what identity must mean to her and how she's struggled with her identity, especially if we talk about the mother who shall not be named, and, you know, her accepting and being proud of the person that she has become. And I'm, you know, for a lot of queer people, especially, like, it can be very scary to kind of own your identity and be the person who you are on the inside and not feel accepted by the outside world. And for her wanting to be surrounded by people who are like-minded, that's survival instinct. And I think it must be scary for her to be like, okay, here are all these different people from all around the world who have very, very different lives from me. Can I trust them? Like, we know as viewers that we can trust everybody, and we've kind of seen how they are in their home lives, and we think they're generally good people. You know, even Wolfgang, who's done some bad things, and I mean, Nomi's done some bad things herself, but they're not bad people. But imagine for her not being able to know if she can trust them. and that they'll have her back necessarily, because this is all still very new and scary and they don't know a lot of things. I just, identity, you know, it just, it must be so difficult for her to kind of be open to that sort of thing.
Britt, do you have any thoughts on the mother's conversation with Nomi?
None that haven't really been tapped on here.
Yeah, it's always going to be interesting to me when a show gets so far into the science as to ask specific questions like this. Probably a lot of the reason I love the show, quite frankly. I guess it makes sense. If anyone's listened to Rewatchable before, you'll know that I get pretty obsessive about things like In Pushing Daisies. There's just a lot going on in that show that will never be answered to me. But Sense8 is setting up to ask the big questions here, and it's somewhat relieving as a viewer, at least for me, to feel like I'm being heard in a way already. Like in production, they were like, okay, the viewer is going to be asking this at this point, or they might get there eventually. So let's beat them to the punch and let's get this out there. So I think it's interesting. I think it's a nice way of telling your story. And going into more of our Sense8s, we have Kala then. She is waking up after the wedding. Her family's all kind of doting on her and surrounded her bed. They stared at her all night. I don't think they've taken shifts. I think they just stared at her all night. Take that as you will. She goes downstairs and she has a talk with Rajan. He's eating a dish that Kala's great-grandmother had taught Kala's father. They have a bit of a discussion that it would have been tough for a woman of Kala's great-grandmother's time to be as skilled as she was. So it's there's a little bit of a discussion that could be had there, but I want to discuss more of the character moments here between Rajan's seemingly, he's very relentless, but in like a very kind way of, yeah, we're getting married. And Kala's like, I thought you just weren't going to do it. Maybe in a relief. I'm not going to define how she feels there.
She was totally relieved.
Well, maybe she would have been, right? But then she does have that smile that tricks me, because she seems to kind of fall for him in my perspective here.
She's just polite, Mitch.
You think she's just being nice to him?
Yes. I mean, I think she cares for him. I really do. She's not in love with him, though. And I think if he had decided to leave, she would have been sad and it would have been awkward. And I don't think she wants to make him sad, but I think she truly would have been relieved.
Yeah. And I'm curious, Britt, too, how you're feeling about Kala. Is she still one of your favorites to watch on screen?
Yeah, because I think she has the most mystery about her, and she has this great tension between doing what's right by her family and what will make her family happy, while also trying to, you know, position herself in a way that's like, okay, so like, were you happy really when you got married? Or like, were you nervous? Like, will things get better? Also, I'm kind of trying to tell you that I hate this. And, you know, I thought the wedding was really cool. And then she has this like really intimate connection with Wolfgang, which I think is really going to be great to unpack going forward. And they're just kind of there for each other in a way that is not exactly the same as everybody else. It's not like she's tapping into him to fight anyone or steal anything. She's tapping into his existence in a more, you know, intimate way, especially the places that they're seeing each other. It's like, at her engagement party when she's feeling unsure of things. It's in her private bathroom. It's in her bedroom the morning as she's getting dressed. You know, it's very at her wedding. It's all these very intimate places where she's supposed to be feeling things for another person, and she's just not feeling it. So I still like Kala a lot.
Well, it makes me happy to hear that, because I like Kala a lot too.
Given what you said about Kala's loyalty to her family and the expectations she feels, I'm kind of surprised that she doesn't cross over with Sun more.
That's a really good point, because they do have a lot of the same obligation plot going on.
But I think Kala has support. Like, I feel that's like if true. She told her family that she didn't want to get married, they'd be disappointed, but they wouldn't, like, throw her out this other family is just riddled with abandonment.
Right.
That is absolutely true.
Yeah, they're seeing it to extremes on either end, but perhaps Sun's seeing it to further extremes, seeing as she's not, like, quote, imprisoned in a marriage to any effect that Kala might feel, but she's literally imprisoned because of her family's actions.
Well, so, yeah. And I feel like maybe Kala is not worried about her family. Like, yeah, that might be a part of it, but, like, her biggest worry is that, is this marriage what I want? Is it what, you know, like, so her worries are more centered on, like, her life rather than her family, whereas Sun is worried about, you know, what this is going to do to her family's business. So I feel like that's why Wolfgang and Kala connect in such a way, is like they're both trying to kind of find their own way as opposed to worrying so closely about what their family thinks.
Mm-hmm. Especially after the scene with his uncle. And then, like, you know, we already know that he and his father were not the tightest of father-son duos. And so he's sort of following in his father's and family's footsteps as Kala is, but also, like, slightly betraying them along the way because she's not completely into marrying Rajan. He's not completely taken away from the family business, but is kind of screwing them in the process.
Yeah, and I think it would have been nice for Sun to see more of Kala's family dynamics. I mean, it probably would have just made her really sad, but maybe would have made her realize that she shouldn't be going to jail for these terrible people. But as somebody who's not particularly close with my family, it's always interesting for me to kind of get a sneak peek into a family like this, who's very close, who's very large, who, you know, spend a lot of time together. And it's, I don't know, it's very foreign to me, but I like it. I like to soak up, you know, that loyalty to the family, not because you feel an obligation, but because in this case in particular, because you feel a true sense of love for the people around you. And luckily, Kala's family is freaking amazing, so she doesn't have too much work to do there.
Right, they all seem to have, like, an inner sweetness, even when Kala's auntie, I love that scene when she's going to try and describe sex to Kala, and just I like their relationship, because it's like, we have the internet, like, Kala is both acknowledging you know, her aunt's interest in helping out Kala, but is also acknowledging, like, hey, this is a little bit awkward, but we're from different generations. I have a little bit more knowledge than you do, and I don't mean for you to take offense by that, but it just is what it is.
Yeah, it's awkward and embarrassing, but it also comes from a place of love on both sides, yeah, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, you do feel a lot of love in Kala's life, which is probably a whole thing with, she's not feeling it towards Rajan perhaps, but she's feeling it from her family. So it's almost like she has so much love already. How can she fit more in? But there's always room to grow your heart, Kala. You never know.
And we were talking about, you know, this idea with Nomi about having, being able to tap into something that's so different. So Kala is kind of going against her own personal wishes to appease a loving and doting, very overly doting family. Whereas Wolfgang is kind of in the opposite boat, where he's doing things to hurt the family and appease himself in spite of a family that is kind of oppressive and doing everything that they can to hurt each other. So it's like the most opposite that they can be in their family dynamic. I agree that Sun and Kala sort of play off of each other and against each other in certain ways, but I think that the binary that exists between Kala and Wolfgang is so perfectly mirrored that their connection is strong because of that.
Of course, and Wolfgang is in Kala's story again in this episode, because he once again pops up in her personal space. What I want to point out here is the fact that the last in this episode, and even before that, there seems to be almost like a camera's study of Wolfgang's body, because it lingers on him. And I almost compare it to the Call Me By Your Names study of Elio's body. It's like looking at a piece of art at this point, as opposed to something sexual to me. And I think that's how I'm meant to feel, because the man is built literally like a Greek sculpture. Like, he's to the T perfect. And that, I think, is what's shocking Kala, that she's seeing this naked demon, that he has all of those kind of classic biblical traits of being so extremely perfect and having this beautiful smile, but also having a dangerous look to his blue glittering eyes. So, I mean, obviously I'm still in love with Wolfgang. Just because,
is Kala feeling this way, or is Mitch?
This is Mitch. This is Mitch. I mean, the actor's very beautiful.
You're projecting a lot on... I'm not saying it's wrong. I feel like you're projecting a lot on Kala right now.
It reminds me of what's going around a lot right now, with everybody saying like their favorite thing about art history is the way that Lucifer is depicted, because he's like super hot, but also like he's the devil, and it's very conflicting. That's what your little speech reminded me of.
I love your art history jokes, Karen.
Thanks.
Oh, that's great. So my point here is, he didn't drown. No one really seems to be concerned about that. Whatever. They seem to move on very quickly. He says nudity isn't as big of a deal in Germany, so that answers that question from last week. Why is everyone so naked at the pool? Or the hot tub in this episode. It just happens, I guess. Whatever. He also says this quote. I had to paraphrase. I still can't find like a good, if anyone can, please send it to us, a good transcript reference. He said something to the effect of, I knew from the moment that I saw you that I wanted you. And she kind of turns away after like, I don't know how she was feeling. I can't define it as a super fan, but she turns away after having a thought. Brittany, what do you think her thought was there?
I think it was probably the same thought that you had, Mitch.
He has really nice eyes.
Yeah, she's really in love with his eyes.
Yep.
You see into her soul in a way that Rajan's just don't, because Rajan is too busy dancing.
Oh, but he can dance. That's fun. I like him for his dance abilities. And he even goes on to say, like, very specifically, why did you look at, they redact it for some reason, but my penis. And then he says, you're looking again, to which she kind of does and then looks away and is like, no, I'm not. So there's a bit of a tension going on there, and it's feeling like it's building up to something. We get a little bit more of something. So close, guys, I promise. So the whole episode,
what,
though.
Is that a euphemism?
Because the whole episode, the whole episode is literally a tease. We have these kind of instances coming in, like even with Diego, like honestly, like the whole episode feels like it's leading up to a sexual climax.
I feel a little weird about the Wolfgang Kala interaction in her bedroom, and I don't want to, so I'm hoping that you guys can convince me otherwise. Here's my thing. I like both of them a lot. Definitely in like the top tier of my favorite characters, each of them are. And I love the chemistry between them. And I don't inherently have a problem with the way that they're, you know, opposites, and that Wolfgang is very comfortable with his sexuality in a way that Kala isn't. But I think the only way that this kind of interaction between them and his teasing of her is okay is because he actually can see into her mind, and he does know that she doesn't feel the same way about Rajan as, you know, everybody else thinks she does. But like, I don't know, did anyone find him like a little creepy in this scene?
As I would the devil.
Other than Mitch.
I just have trouble not imagining their story in like as like a rom-com, because mm-hmm. like it's so funny how he pops up in the most inopportune moments for her. Yeah. Like she's at her wedding and poof, there's naked Wolfgang like to distract her. So I'm less sensitive to him being naked in her bed, like talking to her. Like that is a little creepy, especially since she doesn't even know his name. She has no idea how he got there. Like that would be incredibly scary and very creepy. But because we know how he's there and why he's there, like it takes away a bit of that scare. It's just, this is how they connect, and he always seems to be naked. Like it's just one of those things.
And so she has to be thinking of him as well for the connection to kind of work. Like, we've learned that this is a little bit of how that operates. So right, I guess like it is on her too. He's not just like jumping in completely naked. Here I am again.
Ta-da. Like, yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's, they both kind of have to be involved in it in order for him to show up.
Yeah. And we have that, it like, it plays okay in this episode, I think, because we have that other scene where Will and Riley run into each other in the bar situation because they're like, I was thinking of you. Oh, I was thinking of you too. And then you have like, you know, they can't just appear against the other's kind of will, or if they're not on the same sort of wavelength, because as we saw with Caffeus, like Sun just couldn't appear because he needed to fight someone. So like, it's not like, you know, it's just Kala being like, oh, I'm thinking of Wolfgang naked in my bed and poof, there he is. It has to be, they have to be sort of maybe not thinking of a person in particular, but thinking of like in the instance where Riley needs Will's skill set to get out of being suffocated to death. You know, it's more of like, I need this now. I need to figure out a way out of here, figure out a way out of here. And that just happens to be Will. Like, it's, there has to be something going on both ends. And, you know, I think Wolfgang and Kala have that, like we were saying, like pre-mapped out relationship where, okay, yeah, here I am. What can I do for you? Let me talk you through your sexual crisis right now.
And many a sexual crisis will there be. Leto also has some sexual crisis going on because he loves men, and it's still assumed that he's loving women in his interview that he's going to be doing. He also has a bit of a crisis because he thinks Joaquin is going to be around any given corner. They're at a luchador match, and Leto kind of looks off and sees a mysterious masked man potentially watching him in the distance. But the interesting part is that amongst all of this stress, Leto is still able to recover and give a very moving soundbite that made me just melt in any given way. It was so incredible. What amazing writing. I love it so much. Was that you, Karen, that I heard react?
Yes, sorry. He, like, I am really proud of him for, I mean, he's an actor, so he can kind of pull on these different strengths and skill sets whenever he needs to. And for him to be like, oh, I just, like, I was doing a thing. I'm sorry. Anyway, let's start over. And he kind of plays it off very well. And you kind of realize, because he can be such a drama queen sometimes, and sometimes he seems so hopeless to me because he's just panicking about everything. And in this instance, he's so smooth, and he just, that recovery, man, like, it's so impressive.
Yeah, good on him, because I couldn't do the same in a live scenario. Kristen, were you impressed?
Who isn't impressed by Leto? I mean, come on. I just swoon when that man starts, like, talking, like, when he actually gets, when he's not just, like, panicking over cramps or whatever, like, when he's being smooth, oh my god. Like, he's incredibly charming and just, ugh, yeah. So this interview, like, you can see this poor interview lady just being absolutely smitten over him, and there's, I understand it. Like, I get it. he's one hell of a force, man.
Yes. Yes, he is. And it's interesting to me to see the relationship with Danny evolve, how Hernando and Danny are bonding a bit when they're describing, well, he's describing how he loves any form of art. And she's really into it with him, and they all stand up and they all shout and they scream together. It's continuing that thread too. We saw of Hernando appreciating, or Leto not appreciating Hernando's cooking, but then Danny loving it. And Leto was like, why is no one caring about my problems? I'm so important. And everyone else is like, okay, whatever. We're going to live life while you have your dramatic moments. Come back to us when you're ready, pretty much. But still, there's a connection going on, because we will get to the orgy. We're so freaking close. We have Caffeus, and I swear we're there. The point I wanted to bring up is that Danny is very active in their sexual life still, to the point of masturbating and filming them or taking pictures, whatever she was doing, during the striptease and the banging, I suppose, to some effect. That's a lot for a person to be involved in. Now that we're seeing more of this, Brittany, are you starting to feel uncomfortable with the threesome, or does this feel like okay to you?
Well, I am not uncomfortable mainly because no one seems to be objecting to it. So it's all kind, I'm assuming off screen some conversations have happened. But yeah, I think it's just a thing that everyone seems to be okay with. So whatever makes you happy, go for it. As long as everybody's consensual in what is happening.
Because I guess to a certain effect, we did have the consensual cork pop, which speaks volumes. So we'll let it rest there. I'm assuming you're right. Yeah, that they're having some off-screen conversations that would fill in the blanks as to how they got to this level. This seems extreme to me. Without those conversations, I guess we just have to live with that from here on out. Anyone else feel strongly about Leo before we move on to Kafias? Kristen, you want to say anything more? Or?
No, I mean, Leto is Leto. We'll get back to him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm good.
Alrighty. So Kafias is our last sensei before, I'm just going to say, I wrote it as the mindfuck group orgy. Kafias is hired by Silas again to escort Silas's daughter, Amandi, to go get her leukemia treatments. What I want to ask here is, Britt, were you shocked to see that Silas had a daughter, that he was somewhat compassionate? Did you want to see more of this scenario? Do you want the scene to be extended, the sandcastle stuff and all that?
I mean, I would love to see anybody build a Little Mermaid castle because that's just my dream. And I cried when I saw Prince Eric's castle in Disney World when I was 22 years old. So
same.
That, yes, I would love to see. I think that him having the daughter took a turn that I wasn't expecting. I thought he was showing Kafias his daughter in order to be like, hey, I'm not a completely terrible person and this girl doesn't know what I'm doing. So it's best that, you know, you're running drugs or whatever you're running for me so that I can continue to be this person to my daughter, which is what your mother is to you, sort of deal. Like, I'm doing everything for her. What I wasn't expecting was that the stuff that Kafias would be running is his daughter. Like, that he is now giving Kafias the only thing that matters to him. And it's not a pair of coconuts. It's his flesh and blood, and saving her is of the utmost importance. And I think that he, A, chose Kafias because of that impressive performance with fighting off that gang, but also because he was doing it to save the drugs so that he could give them to his mother. So he has that familial connection, and he sees that enough in Kafias to where he's like, okay, this is the guy who's going to and is willing to do anything to protect someone that someone else cares about. So I think that was really interesting and sort of raised, when it was just drugs that I thought were going to be run, I was like, well, all right, it's kind of boring. But now I think the stakes are a lot higher.
Yeah, it's always fun to me to see a humanizing effect of a antagonistic character. But it's funny because I suppose Kafias can relate pretty well to Silas, that there is danger and insecurity around protecting a sick loved one. So they're relying on each other really to get that done, which you could say is a bit of a bond in a way that they can relate in that fashion. So it makes sense to me that they wrote in this plot of the daughter. I forgot about it actually, so it was a bit of a joy to see it come about, because same with the Little Mermaid castle. I'm like, okay, the show knows me. And overall, the daughter, Amandi, she seems so sweet. She's genuine here. Yeah. Her and Kafias really have that similar trait of doe-eyed beauty, is how I'd put it. They see the world in the most beautiful fashion of rose-tinted glasses, and I'm totally okay with that because I think the world could use a little bit more of that. These characters seem to have that going. He drops her off and he is watching the Van Damme movie. I don't know how else to transition from there to just say there's also just the orgy. Like, all of this is going on, and also there's an orgy. Like, it's happening while these plots are still going on. So we're just going to have to take a total, like, veer to the left and say that everybody is binging everyone. The only sensates not included and or side characters, really, are Sun, Riley, and Kala. We have no sexual preference, it seems. There are men kissing men. There are women kissing women. There's literally anything you could want is in this scenario. Actually, were there two women? No. I think that Nomi was the only woman involved. No, then again, we did have Nomi and Neat. So yeah, we pretty much had like any given mix you could have of sexual orientations going on here. Kristen, help me out here. How do you put into words how you feel about this scene? Because I know it's a lot.
Yes, it is definitely a lot. I mean, it's interesting kind of seeing like how it works. Like when the scene first starts and you've got Nomi and Amanita, like, you know, they're having a very personal, private moment. And then boom, like everyone is involved. And at first I want to say it was kind of like off-putting. Like Nomi and Amanita are having this like really bonding, beautiful moment. And then all of a sudden there's four or five other people involved in it. And it just, for me at first, I was a little like taken aback by it. Like, you know, is this okay? Like, is this okay with Nomi? Obviously Amanita's not going to know what's going on, but like for Nomi, does it take away some of that like bond and some of that like really special moment for them? You know, the others involved, I think it's all, you know, like Lito and Hernando, like they're in a relationship, so it's special for them too. But I think because of the Danny of it all, and you know, the fact that they haven't just gone through something really stressful like Nomi and Amanita, that it's not as abrupt for me to see other people kind of join into their lovemaking. And of course, like Wolfgang, he's just like, yeah, let's just do the thing. And poor Will is kind of sucked into this without really, I don't think he realizes what's going on. And then, you know, but his mind is open enough at the time that he kind of gets brought into the orgy and is just like, okay, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I think definitely pairings and things going on inside of all of this that for me had more, I was more emotionally affected by than just like the orgy going on screen.
Yeah. And I suppose it would be appropriate to talk about what each character was doing when, if it mattered a lot. Will was, yeah, working out with Diego. Diego was kind of, once again, in my opinion, in my ship, my crack ship, hitting on Will here by saying what will be my favorite quote. And Will's just going out the dumbbells, getting very sweaty. Diego's like, check out these hot girls. And Will kind of just like looks away. He's like, cool, whatever. but I think personally, out of this orgy, that the most sensual and like character driven exciting moment was when Will has a kiss with Lito, because of the way the actors played it. I thought it had the most surprising amount of chemistry that I did not see coming. They never do when I'm seeing it. Brittany, I'm dying to hear how you feel about Will and his dumbbells, or any of these given scenarios. Did anyone else stick out to you? Are you okay over there?
I mean, I'm fine. I don't know why you're posing the question like you are, but I think
because a lot of people were having sex on screen at the same time. That's a lot to handle.
I think that the thing that stuck out to me the most was just how Wolfgang was like sort of passive in this whole thing. Like he was just chilling in the pool, you know, leaning against the thing. That was like it. Like he was just there and it was happening. I thought it was kind of interesting to see them cut back to the reality of what's happening and like having different people appear at different times. So like Nomi was with Will, but then Lito was with Will, and you know, Lito's moments with Will were sort of reflective of what was happening when he was helping Hernando work out. And then Nomi, you know, was kind of what she was doing to Amanita was also with Will. But you know, I think in the moment, because everybody's sort of like, you know, nearing that orgasmic moment that no one's thinking of where they are or who they're with in that moment. It's sort of just like, they're just like all existing on this plane of, you know, things are happening to me and I don't care who's doing them as long as they continue to happen. And I think at the end, like where Leto's like, oh, that was the best orgasm of my life. And then Hernando's like, oh, okay, great, my turn. It's sort of like, oh, we were able to get Leto there because he was involved in this existential scenario. Whereas for Hernando, it was very much real and happening, but he wasn't experiencing the same thing that was happening with everybody else. So, you know, you have Amanita and you have Hernando sort of just like, well, all right, here we are.
I am so impressed with your composure. I guess it must have been the Lady Gaga vampire orgies that have prepared you for moments like this. I still get very flustered.
Matt Bomer just lay on a bed covered in blood. You can handle pretty much anything.
Yeah. And or Hannibal, I'm sure. There's a lot there, too.
There's a lot of unsatisfied people in Hannibal.
Yeah. Not here. Everyone's
mainly
getting
theirs. Four seasons of Will and Hannibal not being able to be together, but it's fine.
That's rough. I'm sorry.
We went over the cliff together in the end. Everything's
fine. Sorry for your losses. Karen, I'm going to propose two things to you. You are more than welcome to take both or one, depending on how you feel. Leto's striptease and then his banging with Hernando, or the Van Boner.
Oh, God. Okay. I'll take and both or. Because
yes.
I need to talk about it. First of all, I think, I don't know. I like this scene. I think what I particularly noticed with this show is that they're not afraid to show what real people do and what they do in their private time, which, I don't know, could be awkward for some people or could be unnecessary on a plot level. But for this particular show, I just kind of like, when we see Sun sitting on the toilet changing out her tampon, like for me, that's just, it's what we do. Like, it's just realistic. And I can understand that some people don't like that, but I like seeing behind the curtain because it makes me at least feel like I'm in these people's shoes a little bit more than I normally would be with anybody else. So this orgy scene, I don't know. I really like it for a lot of different reasons. I think Will with the dumbbells and his potential sexual awakening is really interesting. And to be honest, I love how he just kind of went with it. And he didn't seem too concerned, like maybe mildly surprised, but for the most part, not a big deal. I think Leto was super hot that, you know, he obviously can dance and he was very happy with Hernando. And especially when he was like, oh my God, that was the best orgasm I've ever had in my life. I thought that was kind of funny. The Van Boner, as we are calling it, I actually didn't catch it the first couple of times, but this time I was really like, wait, is that really happening? And you can see the look on Caffeus's face when he's like, why is Van Damme giving me a boner right now? And so it's just interesting to me that he didn't necessarily connect with the others enough to be in the orgy, but he definitely felt the effects of it. Which again, I think goes back to like the level of passion that the group is having or one person is having and whether or not it affects the other people. But yeah, kind of awkward when he was like very confused. And then the kid comes onto the bus and he kind of has to be like, yes, I'm still watching this movie. And it's just, it's weird, but like they don't make it weird by, you know, lingering on it.
Yeah, they make you catch it. They don't sell it to you, really. I don't know to what effect everything was going on. I thought I saw pants zipping up this time, and I was like, oh, he must... Caffeus really likes Van Damme lifting up that bathtub a lot.
I think he was just adjusting. I don't think there was any zippers involved. Okay.
Well, I couldn't help but laugh because this is the first time I noticed it too. And I think I've seen this episode, oh my God. Like I've watched the whole first season probably four times by now. I just wonder how long it took for them to find the perfect sexual innuendo moment for the Van Damme movies to be like, this is the moment that Kavius is going to have his sexual confusion or awakening during. I don't know.
I wish I could have been on that research team, though, because I feel like I would have really enjoyed that.
You would have had a lot of fun.
Watching all the Van Damme movies. That would have been cool. Yes, this is the perfect scene. I've watched all 57 of his films. He probably has like, more than 57, to be honest.
Oh, yes. But, like, seeking out the homoerotic hidden parts of it. That's where I think would be more in line with your Lucifer love, maybe.
That's probably fair.
We do have a little bit more of frontal nudity, once again, of Wolfgang. And for me, it lost its shock value completely here because there's so much else going on that, like, the nudity matters so little by this point. The show desensitizes you to frontal nudity for the fact that it's just like, okay, now we're all having orgasms. It reaches a higher level very quickly. You're in for a roller coaster in the show. Like it's not going to let up. This is the pace, really. For anyone that says it's slow, it's because I binged that I never saw it. But when I was binging, I definitely kept going after this episode. I couldn't stop after the mindfuck group orgy. I needed to know more. Britt, I'm sure it's difficult for you right now to have to watch just one episode at a time, not knowing what's going on. How are you feeling now that the group mindfuck is over? Are you excited to see more potential group mindfucks, or was one enough?
I don't need it to dominate the show. I think there's enough else going on that, you know, we don't need this every week. But it did do a lot in terms of confirming, you know, how people are connected, what sort of sensations connect other people, and how this group of eight very different, very scattered, both locally and mentally, people all have some of the same needs and desires that can be met in a very common way. And that there's nothing wrong with that, no matter how you get it. If you're happy, you're happy. If you're satisfied, you're satisfied. So I think it did do that. And not that I'm necessarily opposed to having anything else happen. I think it doesn't need to be an event every week or every other week or even more than once a season, because there's so much else to unpack in this show. And I think this was a great unifying scene, but also at the same time, I think we can move on and tackle some other things.
Yeah, the show definitely will have to tackle a lot of these plots they're developing, assumedly, coming up. And I want to just say one last time, if anyone, Darren or Kristen, feels very strong about any particular developments during the orgy, speak now or forever hold your peace. I'm sure there'll be more sex to talk about. But for now, does anyone feel particularly strong about any of the pairings, the ships, or have we all said our piece on the group orgy?
I think we're good for now.
Yeah, I'm good.
We conquered it. We did it. If anyone's curious, I think I don't know if it's spoiler free. I can look into that. But there's an interview with the creators describing what it was like to film it, or the actors. I don't remember which. Basically, they were saying it's not as sexy as it looks on TV because it was a lot of like, I think the quote was something like, you go in here, now you back off. Like, they're being very directed. I mean, as any sex would be in any TV show. But I found it particularly interesting that there was, like, an interview out specifically about this group orgy and how it was developed. So I'll check it out. I'll see if it's newbie appropriate for spoilers. And if so, I can try and pass it along to the appropriate means. Maybe we can tweet it out if it's something cool or not. Or include it in show notes. Who knows? Or you can find it yourself if you want to be risky. Okay, so that wraps up what we wanted to talk about with our episode discussion for Sense8 106 Demons. Now I want to go into our favorite scenes and our favorite lines. Karen, I want to start off with your favorite scene for this episode.
Okay. My favorite scene is, one, how Wolfgang was like the only one who's super chill after the orgy. Like, he is just totally fine hanging out in the pool, and like everybody else is feeling either great because they just had a huge orgasm, or maybe a little confused, like Kavius or Will. But Wolfgang's just like, whatever, this is life. He's obviously very comfortable with his sexuality, so I kind of like that he was just chill. Slash, you know, Will getting that workout in and maybe being a little confused after. I enjoyed that slight discomfort.
Same. Hey, and Kristen, how about yourself?
I really liked the Riley and Will scene at the beginning of the episode. Not just because, like, we kind of got a little bit of, you know, confirmation. We're getting more confirmation about how this whole thing works. But I just really like them. And, like, the way they kind of talk and get, they kind of get each other. It was just really nice. And I love the bit with Diego. It's just, it cracks me up. Riley's like, oh, I like him. So, yeah, it's cute.
Yeah, I liked Riley's seal of approval there, for sure. How about yourself, Brittany?
My favorite scene was Hernando geeking out about wrestling and how it's much deeper than people give it credit for. There's a story happening.
Yeah, he's very passionate about lots of things, and that makes sense that him and Lita would match up to that extent, in my mind. Then my favorite scene was, I wrote just this because I still feel this way. Did anything else happen besides the orgy? It's so hard to think past that in this episode. I don't know. I try not to approach that from an immature level, but more of like, that was a major development very quickly with a lot of things going on at once. So that's where my mind sits on that. Going into our favorite lines, Karen, what's yours?
Mine is actually from the scene that was Kristen's favorite between Riley and Will. And it's when Will has Diego answer the phone for him. And Diego just goes, some chick with a weird accent. And Riley goes, weird accent? And then Diego says, she sounds hot. And then, you know, obviously after that, Riley likes him quite a bit. But I thought that was kind of cool. And it actually reminds me of something that happened to me when I was younger and a lot more naive, which is that I have a friend in India and I heard her talk slash sing for the same time, first time. And I was like, I love your accent. And she just said, what accent? And that kind of like, oh yeah, like that opened my eyes to the fact that I have an accent too, an American accent. So it was just right. One of those moments that kind of resonated with my own life.
Yeah, that's unique. I like that a lot. And Kristen, what was your favorite line?
Mine comes from the Kala Wolfgang scene, which just is hilarious. And she says, okay, I don't know what's going on here. If I'm totally losing my mind, or if one of the gods or goddesses is angry with me and has sent a demon, a dangerous pervert demon who never seems to have any clothes on.
Poor it's Kala.
Yeah.
She's definitely going through a lot here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Brittany, what's yours?
Mine was when the little girl wanted to be called whatever Wonder Woman's real name is.
Diana Prince?
Diana Prince.
God, sorry. I don't watch any of the WB stuff. Oh, sorry. So anyway, whatever. Caffeus is like, Wonder Woman. And she goes, shh, they call it a secret identity for a reason.
She seems like a little spitfire. I like her.
Mm-hmm.
It's for real, yeah. I'm hoping, because I forget, that we get to see more of her. And then my favorite line is, you're keeping it looking tight, Gorski. And that whole speech was just like, oof, okay. Yeah, there's a lot going on there. Somehow I did notice all of that. Once again, the orgy probably distracted me from this, what I would call a very explicit innuendo going on here. It felt more than buddy cop stuff. It felt like checking you out, and I was like, oh my god, so here for this. That's the thing though with the show, like, we're seeing exactly what the orgy, you can literally ship anything and anyone, and anything can come true because everybody's begging everyone. So it's almost like you can't lose here. This is the perfect kind of show for a crack shipper like myself, isn't it? So our contact info, if you want to get a hold of us after all that insanity, our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. And we love 5-star iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will give you a pillow for your jail time stay. Thank you, Karen. That's so kind of you.
You're welcome. It's the least I could do.
All right. And then we're going to go into our listener feedback from this week. We have some tweets. And our first, I would love for you to take, Brett.
Our first is from Marie, who is at ILRAM07. I don't know if it's Ilram or something. But she says, "You guys, Wolfgang is boring. Other hosts, he's just German. Me, a German." GIF of Leto sobbing.
Oh.
Poor Leto. And poor Mary. I'm sorry.
I don't think Wolfgang is boring.
Or Marie. Sorry.
No. He's boring is not the word to describe Wolfgang. Stoic, maybe.
I know, stoic. Caitlin, I think Caitlin doesn't like him, but I like him. And that doesn't surprise anyone, because whatever Caitlin doesn't like, I love.
I almost consider Wolfgang a bit of a Remus Lupin type. He has the same kind of energy to me. I mean, I could imagine Wolfgang literally being a werewolf. I didn't mean to make that comparison in that way.
Like, is it just because his name is Wolfgang?
No. That's funny. And then in our next, I would love for you to take, Karen, seeing as it was directed at you.
Yeah. So your best friend Stella at JXSON Kills, maybe it's Jason Kills, but with an X.
Yeah, I believe the name's Jason. Yeah.
Says, "Catching up on Rewatchable, and I'm so glad you got Natalie Fisher to talk about being Australian in relation to Bambi's quote last week. I literally couldn't not think of her every time she'd say, 'I'm Australian.' Also, oh no, I'm becoming attached to literally everyone." Good, you should be attached. I don't know if you're talking about the characters or us awesome Rewatchable hosts, but either way, please love us. I think Natalie felt very like in the spotlight when I was like, "Nat, how do you feel about this?" But I'm glad I'm not the only one who was like, "We need to know what she thinks."
I mean, it's not the first time on a podcast I've been like talking about something and then Natalie would be like, Mitch, it's because I'm Australian, but I'm going to say this. Don't take it the wrong way." And I'm like, okay. All right. And then our last tweet, Kristen.
Sure, yes. The last one comes from Leah at LeahTA11. And she says, "The place I went for lunch was playing the Four Non-Blondes, and all I can think about is Sense8 and Rewatchable." Yes.
Aww. Mission accomplished.
That song, man. That song.
Yeah. It's the show's anthem for a reason. God, it's a good bop. Yeah. All right. So then we're going to go into our final segment of our show. This week, we're going to have our extreme newbie, Brittany, with her Brittany's brainstorms, and Kristen with her half contemplations, should she feel so compelled, for Sense8 107 WWN double D.
Normally I can deal with being a newbie, but for some reason this episode is just driving me crazy. I feel like, I don't know why, I just think like there's so much to unpack about the episode that making predictions for the whole season is a failed effort on our part. But that's because we don't have Mitch's crazy theories in the mix this show, I guess.
True.
I mean, they're very special.
Yeah, everyone loves them. I'm not that crazy, so my predictions are not worth anything to anyone. But if we have to talk about WWNDD, I don't know what would Nomi Double Decker Bus do for... I don't know. This show is so crazy. Literally anything could happen. But I'm hoping that we follow up with Caffeus and his new found friend that he keeps shuttling back and forth. And I want more time with Caffeus's mom, actually, because I think we got a lot of really cute scenes between them in the last two episodes where, you know, she's feeling better and she's up and she's cooking and we saw her like defend him in that flashback moment. So I'd like more exploration of that. And also to get a glimpse of what Sun is going to be doing. I think that there's a lack of forward looking in her case. I know that like, we know that Nomi is on the run and kind of in danger, but also you know, there's a lot going on for Sun at the moment too in this heightened scenario that she's in. But Nomi has a lot of questions, and I think Will's initial investigation into them you know, might actually help her out this week in figuring out what's going on, because she's asking a lot of the right questions. Like, she has that conversation with Anita on the bench where it's like, okay, there's two possibilities. Like, one, your brain is really in trouble and you're gonna die, or two, this guy's lying. And I think it's a combination of the two, that something is going on with her brain and that the guy was lying. So maybe we'll get to see what Dr. Butcher is really up to.
Dr. Butcher. Kristen, I'm assuming, much like myself, you don't remember what this acronym may stand for.
Nope, no idea.
What, I mean, what's your guess? I don't know. Do you want to give a guess?
Well, the N definitely lends you to think it involves Nomi, because she's really the only N in this thing, this experiment. So, you know, it makes you, what would Nomi, whatever the double D thing stands for? I'm not sure.
It's double-decker bus.
Right? It's gotta be, of course. She's gonna go visit Riley, and they're gonna ride a double-decker bus and see all of the Harry Potter highlights of London. That's
clearly— oh, that was so cute. That should have been my favorite line.
Yeah, that was a cute line. But yeah, no, it— I don't remember what this stands for. I don't have any idea, so that's good. Yeah, I second a lot of what Brittany said. Like, it, there's a lot of things that she talked about that need to be, like, resolved. We need a little bit more of Sun's story. But I think this lends us to believe that Nomi will play a significant role in the next episode. That's about all I got as far as prediction goes.
I like being the only one who actually remembers.
Well, I guess we're going to have to find out next week, per usual, for Rewatchable. That will be episode 277. Getting closer to 300 here in the Sensei run.
God.
Yes, it'll be a thing. But for now, we're going to sign off. I was your host, Mitch.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Brittany.
Take care. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
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 Orgasms are a very natural part of life. It's fine to Google it. You should not be embarrassed.
But I mean, it's going to come up with porn, is the point.
And with porn, actually, come viruses. I typed on your computer in the wrong spelling of orgasm, and I was going to tell you this, but then I decided not to, that a lot of porn places use that instead of, like, the actual, I think, just because maybe they don't know how to spell it either.
I feel like they do know how to spell it, but they're going for SEO optimization.
Probably. Yeah. And Urban Dictionary defines it as the fucking idiot's alternative to orgasm, which is a sexual climax. No, that's